listener production.
G'day, it's Scott Phillips here. And as we wind down 2023, as we draw the year to a close, and what a year it has been, we're going to bring you a combination of some new conversations, but also some of the best of 2023. We've already done one of those with Michael Pascoe. This is the second, and it's with Brickworks CEO Lindsay Partridge. Now, if you heard this one the first time, I think you'll agree it's worth another listen. If you didn't, I hope you spend a little bit of time. You know what? Bricks sound like a very, very boring business, don't they? Certainly, if you're not in the industry, it's not the sort of thing that's going to get the front page headlines with all the tech and buy now, pay later and AI and everything else that's going on. Bricks seems pretty boring, but that's what I think is potentially the excitement and the interest of this particular conversation. This is one of the ones with the Michael Pascoe episode, the two most popular episodes we've played this year. We got lots of great feedback on both. And so I thought it was worth just having another go at listening to my conversation with Lindsay Partridge. Enjoy, and I'll see you soon with a brand new episode of The Good Oil. G'day, I'm Scott Phillips, the Chief Investment Officer of The Motley Fool, and welcome to The Good Oil. Now, if you're not familiar with the phrase, giving someone the good oil is giving them the good stuff, the important stuff, and the real stuff, which is exactly the aim of our podcast. We bring you conversations with entrepreneurs, executives, and experts, the people who know what's going on, and the people who make things happen. Now, today's guest, as always, is someone who really knows what's going on. You could say he's building the future because that's literally what his company does, and he's been doing it for a long time. If you reckon being head honcho of a business for 22 years is a big deal, Lindsay Partridge has been working for building materials group Brickworks since 1985. And after almost 40 years in the one place, he's one bloke who really knows what's going on, but has also seen a lot of change, even in the brick business, over four decades. Lindsay Partridge, Managing Director of Brickworks, welcome to The Good Oil.
Thank you for having me.
Mate, Tom, I'm looking forward to this conversation. I will disclose up front, by the way, I'm a shareholder for anyone who needs to know. It's important that we disclose these things, so I will put that on record up front. Mate, talk to me about bricks as a business. There are plenty of people, me included, who look at some of your competitors and think, that is a really cyclical, low-margin business with booms and busts. Brickworks has been a very, very different business, and I will talk about some of your stats, or you're welcome to bring them up. But is Brickworks doing something different, special? I imagine you might say yes. But how is brickmaking not just one of the most base commercial commoditized businesses in the country? How does Brickworks continue to do so well?
Well, we do well because we love it. But people forget is maybe the common side of it, but most of our products is face bricks, and that's actually fashion. And if we can come up with something that looks spectacular, well, people will pay a premium. And so, you know, that's why we've got many products. You know, we import from Spain and Italy, and, you know, we've got glass bricks that you spend $3,000 a square meter if you want. It's a very much a fashion business, and then we pander to that. You know, that's the thing we talk about. It's not a commodity. I think the big mistake that our competitors make is they actually think they're in a commodity and they run the business like that, and that they get the outcome that they deserve.
So let me ask you about that, because I was going to put those words in your mouth, but you've done it for me, which is lovely. Talk about the business itself, though, because I've worked for business in the past. I worked for a bread business once where, you know, factory throughput is the only thing that mattered. You almost couldn't sell it cheaply enough because you just needed that overhead recovery. These were really low price, obviously a loaf of bread, cost nothing, cost more to transport than to make. Like, it's a really, really structurally bad business. But bricks, obviously, to your point, some of your competitors run this as commodity. You guys try and do fashion, but I assume there's something meaningful in between there. There is a throughput, there's an overhead recovery, there is a demand, you know, I assume pretty high operating leverage, right? Massive capital expenditures. If you're short volume, you lose a lot of money. If you manage to get a bit above that, you sort of make a lot of money. How do you think about the economics of the business as well as keeping that kind of fashion element front of mind?
Yeah, well, I actually had a bread maker once that was one of my factory managers. He wasn't a bad factory manager, but he kept the kiln temperature too low.
But didn't want to burn the bricks.
But anyhow, it is throughput, and I mean, I think it's a bit of a mistake. Most, if you ask 39 of my 40 factory managers, they'll all tell you throughput. There might be one who's like, I don't need to go faster to still make them cheap, because that person works out how to make them efficiently, and what they, you know, it's a bigger calculation. But the in our business, the biggest asset's the kiln and dryer, the set that does that. It'll have a definite capacity that you can get to, and that goal is just to run that at 100% the whole time. A big mistake a lot of brickmakers make is that, of course, they then cut their prices if they haven't got enough demand. And what we will do, if I've got 10 plants on the East Coast and the demand's not there, I'll leave 9 at flat out and take one off. Or every so often we need a maintenance stop, we do all the maintenance stops. Like if we have a slowdown next year, we'll stop, we'll do all the maintenance stops. We do repairs and then get going. And if the stock's a bit high, well, we make that 6 weeks instead of 4 sort of thing. And that's how we adjust it. But otherwise, when it's going, it's got to be 24/7, 365 days a year, it never stops. And to keep those plants up and running at that, like that, the team that goes in behind it, I mean, they're built, when we build them, we build them like they're battleships, because they're going to abuse. I mean, you know, bricks aren't light, and we're pulling kiln cars around with 15,000 bricks, you know, they weigh 40, 50 ton. You drop one of those or whatever, you do a lot of damage. And so they're built solidly, really solidly to take that, and we expect them to run for 40 years or more.
It's incredible. I'm still mindful, mate, and I'm sure you've seen this multiple times in your career, where, you know, with periods where everyone wants to talk about everything other than manufacturing, right? There's IT, services, software, everything else is the cool thing. And yet Brickworks has a remarkable, I'll do it now, over 20 years, $1,000 in Brickworks has compounded at 10% per year compared to 9.3% for the All Ords. In fact, when you guys put your last lot of announcements out, it was only earlier this month, last month. Well, you've been beating the market over 3, 5, 10, 15, and 20 years. Again, for a business that otherwise would be considered cyclical, for a business that would have been considered yesterday's business, and I'm sure, as you know, plenty of times over the last, well, you took over 1999 and 2000 when everyone wanted to talk about dot-com companies, and then we had lithium and tech and everything else in the meantime. How do you kind of reflect on that part of your business, mate? Is it the quiet achiever thing? Is it just leave us alone, do our business? Is it do the normal things right, just kind of avoid the fads? Or how do you kind of contrast Brickworks as, in theory, from the outside, a air quotes boring business versus the exciting ones that are all going broke?
Well, look, I think, you know, we've always taken a broad perspective, and we looked at everything beyond just factories. We've also looked at actively managing our land. And, you know, we've always been a land company. It was on the outskirts of the city, and, you know, this is the third iteration of it. So it's not only about running the factories efficiently, it's about making sure that you're deploying those assets. And so as the value of land's come up, we've managed to deploy that, and that's really given us the kicker. Mind you, the big business on its own, most pretty can turn into some pretty good numbers. We've had a couple of areas like Western Australia that have been dragging us back. We've made some decisions around sort of reducing our exposure there. But so that being able to get that extra value out is what's made the difference. And that's where I think the companies go wrong. They don't look at the whole show. The problem with manufacturing, of course, is as fast as you invest, it comes back at you as depreciation. So the cash flow is good, but you're not actually building wealth. If you want to build wealth, you've got to accumulate assets. Well, there's no better way to accumulate assets than in land, because they're not making any more. You know, even gold, there's still gold being produced. So there's no more land being made.
Let's not until Elon turns up on Mars. While we're talking about that, mate, I want to talk about the Brickworks model, because I love this. I still think most people in the market don't understand the land part of your business. We talk about, you know, every company gets thrown into a category, and you guys go into, I don't know whether it's manufacturers or whatever it is, but, you know, the idea of it being a combination business is, conglomerates are really uncool these days. They used to be all the rage. Then everyone realized in air quotes, they were all terrible. The business that just kind of kept on actually adding value internally and creating more of that value just kind of kept doing their thing. You guys, Soul Patts, in which you have a cross shareholding, of course. Even Wesfarmers, you know, people see them as Coles and Kmart, but they're effectively an investment company. Everything's for sale at the right price. Everything's able to be bought at the right price. What I loved about your business is the ability of buying some land out there outskirts when the price is reasonably low, then suburbia kind of expands past you, and all of a sudden you find yourself in the middle of high value land that you can then either sell or develop for your own internal purposes. Can you tell me a bit about the evolution of that model and kind of where you guys are now?
Well, I think it was always there, you know, right back into the early part of last century. It was always there, and they saw that. We had 11 sites around Sydney, you know, the St. Peter's, the parks there was originally, but they did a couple of deals where they got approval from the local council on the basis that they gave the pit in the end back to the council to put rubbish in, and that wasn't so good. Subsequently, when we went to Horsley Park, et cetera, we had large landholders. What people don't understand is that we're still buying land today Like, we're, you know, and that can come in either through we do an acquisition and that the business we buy has got land under it. It's a part of our valuation, obviously, to look at that. A lot of companies don't just ignore it. And then, and the other one is, you know, we need quarries and we just bought 120 hectares at Brinjilla, the other side of the new airport. In future years, that'll be a great block. That'll be a great asset. So, so we're still doing it. It's still evolving. And it's just like the main business pays for that. And then you make your cream on the top is when you turn around and develop it. Housing, there's no real future position unless we wanted to do build to rent or something like that. But I can't imagine we'd want to. But the industrial is a great thing to take a position in. And it's got its little quirks about it, but it's just a great thing, particularly at the moment, because there's a shortage of land for industrial as well. It's very tight in Sydney, you know, at the moment, very, very tight. Of the million square metres we've got, we haven't got one square metre not rented. We've got every one of our million square metres rented.
Tell me more about that, mate. A joint venture with Goodman Group for the most part. Can you kind of just talk about how you guys identify the partner, the use, the value of that business, how you account for that internally?
Yeah, well, we did at the time. This is like in the early noughties. We got in various companies that are in that area, and we had a talk to them. And, you know, for whatever reason, we decided Goodman was the best. I mean, it's been a joint venture made in heaven. It's been a fabulous relationship, you know, on a personal level as well as in business. There's never been an issue. We've always just sorted out our problems. There have been plenty of problems, but we've sorted them out. And yet, I look at the other parties we could have got involved in. It could have been a mess. But they were focused. They love industrial. That's good. We love bricks. You love industrial, and they do the hard yards and the industrial, and it works fine. And they know there's a land bank waiting for them. As soon as they develop one, there's the next parcels there, next parcel. So it means that they can go to their clients, which in some cases are worldwide, like Amazon, et cetera. And they know, oh, yeah, we want three warehouses. And they know in every capital city they can put one up because they've got the land sitting there waiting. So it's a great deal. But then I got here. Like, if they bought the land, they'd have to pay holding charges. So there's no holding charges. It's just there waiting for them when they want.
Speaking of the future, mate, Fast Brick Robotics. I've got to tell you, I did a double take when I saw you guys were investing in them. Now you're the single largest shareholder, I think I'm right in saying. Now, these guys are using robots to build effectively brick walls. I know it's quite houses yet. Maybe it is. You can tell us. For a brick making company, you could supply anybody with bricks, I suppose. But if this is the future, this may potentially either risk your business or there are things you could take from it. Tell us about Brickworks' interest in Fast Brick Robotics.
Well, a lot of people don't understand that we were one of the founding investors of that. It was about 15 years ago, and we'd lost interest in it for a while, and the technical genius behind it all kept working on it, you know, through everything else, and he gradually kept making steps and steps. And actual fact, he can build houses and townhouses today. It's not quite commercial, but the next generation of machine that he's bringing out, we think, will be commercial. And the thing about the robot is that, you know, a human can only really lift about 10 or 15 kilos, you know, in a unit all day long before they exhaust themselves. Or they need another helper, which means because you've got two people lifting a product in, well, then this thing can lift 50 kilos. So, you know, we're talking about making big bricks, right? And we're talking about punching out a house in a day, and not a brick veneer house. We're talking about punching out a full brick house, right? And that will be a game changer. And to people don't understand it, it's like a matrix dot printer and the dots are bricks. That's exactly what it does. But it's smarter than that because it knows spatially where it is. And if the wind blows the boom, it adjusts 50 times a second. So it can drop a brick into a millimeter. It can drop bricks in more accurately than a bricklayer. And the bricks are glued together. There's no mortar. They're glued together. So it's very, very strong walling.
And how does that change, or how does that augment, how does that give you opportunity as Brickworks, the business? Fast Brick sounds impressive. If it can commercialize, you guys seem to think it has a good chance of doing so. What does that do to or for your business?
Well, it means that we're supplying walls and not bricks. We're supplying them into the bricks installed. That's the difference.
And is that vertical integration? Is it lack of competition because you guys are the only ones who are doing it? How does that work for your business?
Yeah, downward, if you like, integration. Yeah, well, it's the biggest problem. I've listened for 40 years. The builders complain about bricklayers. I thought, well, it's just like I've tried a couple of things to get rid of them. This fixes the number one problem that the builders got.
And does that make building quicker, cheaper? Does it make it quicker, cheaper for the homeowner? Where's the key?
I think yes, definitely it'll be quicker. I mean, we could if we can put up a house in a day. If they put the slab in, then we come back the next week, put the bricks up, and the roof goes on. You could possibly lock up in 3 or 4 weeks. Now, if you can take a month out of the building process, Remember, the builder's on the progress payments. And so that's his cash flow. It's a boom to the cash flow.
That's remarkable. How far away is that, mate? I know Hadrian, I think the robot's called, which is a clever name. How far away is commercialization as far as you guys are concerned?
Well, this Hadrian X is the one that's going to be, it's either going to be successful or not. If we think it's going to be successful. And if it's viable, then you know, it's the beginning of the new game, you know, game on.
So, you know, we want to have an educated workforce broadly, and I think that makes sense. I think we all want to believe we can be a higher skilled, higher wage workforce over time. That improves the standard of living. I assume you would suggest we are putting too much emphasis even locally on tertiary education in university courses rather than trades, rather than those kind of practical skills. Is that a short version of how you're seeing the world?
Well, yeah, it's the fact that you can't get the kids. Like you tried advertising, you tried anything. Yeah, they're not really interested because they've come now, got a background. If you're an iPhone kid, your life has been sitting inside playing an iPad. It's not out mucking around outside doing those sorts of things. You're not interested in an outdoor job and working with your hands. So the only way we're going to get around it is we're going to have to immigrate the people that do the work that our population doesn't want to do.
Mate, the other inflation thing you guys have talked about in your public comments before is the cost of energy. Now that seems to at least globally have peaked and maybe is coming back down, but I assume it's still a really significant impost. Is that your major inflationary concern for Brickworks at the moment?
Well, we've managed to secure long-term gas, and so I'm not really worried about that, and it's now sort of tied down at inflation at a higher rate than the cap, I've got to say, but look, we're going to get it and the people are going to try and do what they can to bring it on. What's caught us out in the last 6 months, I've got to say, is basic raw materials that no one would ever think there'd be a shortage of. Like, could you imagine there'd be a shortage of road base? Like, there's no road base. You can't get road base. And I assume it's all going into, I mean, they just dig it out of the ground, but it's all going, I assume, into the airport and the new railway metro and such. And crusher dust, which is, it was a waste material from hard rock quarries we put in our masonry blocks. That's what we put in because it was cheap. It's gone up like 150%. And you can't get it. So, like, these sorts of things, nobody can see that coming. It just sort of happened overnight. And those things that have really sort of made us choke in a couple of areas, just the extent of the increases and then the shortages.
And is that a question of kind of the economy running too fast? I mean, yeah, they seem like local supply issues. We're not talking about oil from oil from Russia or wheat from Ukraine. This is, strikes me at least, as an economy that's at capacity. We're probably over spending, over stimulating, and that's causing those sort of unusually large variations.
Absolutely. Look, you know, they stimulated the individuals, you know, get them through COVID. At the same time, they threw all this money in these massive capital work projects, and not just one state, right down the East Coast. I mean, you're trying to build the Olympics in Brisbane, and you know, and the projects are just beyond our capacity. And so we've ended up with a huge labour shortage. And I'll tell you, labour. So we used to hire fitters and electricians at about $30 an hour. We're currently paying $90 to contractors, three times the rate. And if you don't get up those sort of numbers and $60 an hour for someone to come on your stuff, nobody even answers. And then they bargain with you. If you go up $10 an hour in the space for a couple of hours.
Tell the kids to go and be tradies, obviously. Sounds like the message.
Well, you're $50 an hour, you're on $2,000 a week. It's not bad for somebody who's an apprenticeship and got out when they were, you know, 20.
It's a good quid. Tell me your story, mate. How do you become a brickmaker by trade? What's the journey to that?
At the University of New South Wales, I did ceramic engineering. And those days in the mid-70s, you know, it was exciting because, you know, the space shuttle was covered in ceramics and silicon chips were coming out, and you know, there's all sorts of things that were going into, and you know, a lot of defense things, new sonars, and all this sort of stuff was all ceramics. And but in Australia, the main industry, of course, was heavy clay, which is sort of the dumb end of the business, but it suited me.
very good, mate. So talk about your career through Brickworks. Obviously, you saw or you felt some ambition, others saw opportunity and potential in you. How's your career kind of evolve after you joined?
Well, I only went for one interview, and that was an interview with my previous employer, and I'd been quite successful with them, and ended up, had like four factories I was running, and I spent a stint in the United States and stints all over Australia, and I'd been out like 9 years. So I had a bit of experience, and the general manager of Austral Bricks invited me to come and work for them. And he gave me this plant that was completely flogged out in Sydney, the one actually we were rebuilding plant to. I went in there and it was like a disaster, like a bomb went off. I just couldn't believe that anybody could destroy it. And it wasn't that old then. It was only 20 years old, and they completely destroyed it. I couldn't believe it. And our, in the next 2 years, we really put it together and it was flying. And then the 2 years later, so maybe operations manager, so I ran all the New South Wales plants, had five plants. 2 years, then they made me general manager in New South Wales. I did that for 10 years. I'd say to anybody who wants a career, you need to be a general manager for 10 years because that's when you really get the experience and you really learn. You get to do the things that you don't, the tough things, the decisions and handling tough people situations, that you know. So I did that. And then the previous MD, previously, he wanted to retire. And so I became deputy MD and then I was deputy CEO and then CEO and MD. So I spent a lot more time as the boss that I did in the early years. So anyhow, I don't know how much longer I'm going to go, but anyhow, so we'll see.
Happens if you get there quickly enough. Mate, yeah. Talk to me about that job of, you mentioned the clapped out brick factory. Take us inside a building products business. Bricks and tiles, obviously, your key business lines. What makes a good, what makes a bad brick factory? How do you look in and go, gee, this isn't terrible, or here's what I need to improve? How much was just kind of basic common sense, and how much was some insight or some obvious change that needed to be made?
Look, any business that comes down, what the gross margin you're achieving, and that's got two factors, you know, what you can sell it for, how good's the product you're making, and what sort of price you can get for it. And the second one is, you know, how cheap can you make them? And anyhow, so we this was a premium plant, and we managed to, came up with a range of products that we got dramatically increased prices that we could. We made a quality was had been terrible. We turned the quality into brilliant, no waste. And then we pulled a third of the labor out of the plant because I simplified the plant and then fixed up the things that were unreliable. You know, usually the plants is things that are unreliable. Yeah, and so, you know, it went very well. And, you know, as I said, we ran it up until a few years ago and just demolished it. But it was one of our really strong profit-earning plants, and it remained that way ever after that.
Nice. I should say, mate, I am about 3 kilometres from Bowral Bricks, one of your brick plants down here in the Southern Highlands, New South Wales. So I was familiar with the product even before I bought the shares. But that's 100 something years old, I believe.
Yeah, no, I think 1924. No, we just had the 100 years last year. Earlier this year. This is its 100th year, 1923. Yeah, so, like, it's an amazing product, and we're the only one who makes that dry press style, and the architects love it. We're completely sold out. We've spent a lot of money in the plant, but we need to spend some money on a new plant eventually. The kiln needs replacing. It's going very well, and it's great business. And what's nice about that, the community likes us down there. You know, we're part of the community. It was other places we're in regionally. Sometimes they're not liked, but I don't know why, but they do like us there, and so we love it. We would always reinvest back in the same area. We wouldn't move out of the town.
What's the US future look like in terms of growth? I assume everything's possible and everything's on the table at the right price with the right opportunity. To what extent is that the net result of necessary diversification and looking for growth versus obviously a market, the population is 15 times the size of Australia, many, many, many more large cities over there. I mean, the opportunities seem, I would say boundless, but a pretty big potential size. As always, though, Australian companies going to the US have a pretty checkered history. I imagine you're also pretty cognizant of that.
Yeah, look, we looked at a lot and where they went wrong and where they went right. And people, I think, you know, critical of a couple of companies. Well, BlueScope's over there, it's done fabulously well. Hardy's is over there, done fabulously well. Boral did fabulously well until the GFC, and then they lost their mojo at that point. They never regrouped it. You know, the business that we found fits right into our model. It's super premium, you know, right at the top end. We're in the part of the US where brick is more predominant. For commercial and institutional works, whereas in the southern states, remember the American brick market is about five times, it's about 5 billion brick, has been as high as 10 billion versus a bit over a billion for Australia. So it is a bigger market, but our business is two-thirds into that institutional architectural work. You know, and, you know, we've got 60% market share in New York and 70% in Chicago. And, you know, they're and we do these, like, fast food chains, we do universities. We've got 25 universities where we do, it's interesting how many universities there are in Australia, but we've got 25 in America where we do all their brick. Right? All their buildings are out of our bricks. Right? And there's others out of competitors' products. So we're in the market we're in, we don't really have a lot of competition. The prices we get two and three times what the housing builders get down in Texas, et cetera. The Texas market on its own is bigger than Australia.
Mate, the third leg of the Brickworks story, or the third part of the business, is of course the cross shareholding with Soul Patts, Washington H. Soul Patts. And at this point, I will say I also own Soul Patts shares, just to get that on the record. Can you give our listeners a very short potted history of the background of how that came about? Obviously, before your time, before my time, but also how you guys see them and they see you, and how that all works.
Yeah, well, look, it came around in the late '60s. Brickworks was worried that London Brick was going to have a go at us, and anyhow, because we were the largest brickmaker south of the equator. I assume we still are, actually. But so Soul Patts were the same size as us. They're both worth about $26, $27 million. And so they swapped a million shares each. And it was an offensive takeover at the time. Although, as the director said, it doesn't mean that you can't get taken over, it just means you'll get a full price, which, you know, and it has, but it's worked well. But having the investments, and they've grown phenomenally well over that period. I mean, you know, their last 20 years is another couple of percent up on ours. So they've been a great investment. But the thing is, you know, building products is a volatile business. And what having an investment side to the business has allowed us to pay our dividend even in the tough times. And that's why our dividends are very, very reliable. And our share price is backed by our net asset backing, not our NAV, our net assets. So that's a very, very strong situation in that regard. And, you know, the growth in sales you mentioned before, I think today it's about $3 billion, you know, but our property is 2.2, and, you know, we've sort of indicated it's going to go to 3 within 5 years. So those two things alone, I mean, the brick business is almost like a rounding error on the end. We only got $700 million or something invested in it. So but you know, that's great. I mean, a lot of companies would do buybacks or one-off things and a special dividend, and then it's all gone. You know, and so, you know, to actually get us into the situation where we've got this large bank of assets that we can pay this dividend. You know, we got $100 million in, I think, from Souls last year, and we'll be heading towards getting the same in from the property. So that's a pretty good start to the year. Before we start, we know we've got a couple hundred million dollars coming in cash to pay our dividend.
It's a good starting point. Mate, Tom, let me talk about those dividends, because maybe just to give you a victory lap, obviously mostly your time, but also before your time. Brickworks, this is astonishing. I actually didn't even realize how good it was. 47 years as of March, anyway, of 2023. Let's day stamp this. 47 years of dividends that have either increased or stayed the same. That's got to put you in the top, what, 1, 2, 3 businesses on the ASX, surely?
Since we listed in the early 60s, they've only ever once put the dividend down, and that was in 1975. And that was all everyone knows what was going on. It was a pretty tough time in 1975.
Mate, tell me about the future. You talked about buybacks. You talked about dividends, special dividends. Obviously, those aren't on the agenda. But kind of, you know, put your successor's hat on, hopefully in many, many, many years' time. What is the Brickworks sort of strategic 10, 20, 30-year plan look like?
Yeah, good question. Well, I won't be here. Somebody else to the side. We're just trying a bit quiet at the moment because we just want to see how this next 12 or 18 months pans out. And, you know, we've maybe got a little bit more debt than what we wanted, because a few things didn't go our way. The last parcel of land we sold, we could have taken $100 million out. We didn't. We left it in there because we felt that was a safer, more prudent way to keep our gearing down in the trust, which is only sitting at like 21%. And then our plant that we're building, new plant two, is gone over like everything else has, and it's late. It's just about to start right now. But it cost us another $70 million. So we found ourselves, you know, a couple hundred million behind where we wanted to be. So we'll just cool our heels for a little while and just see what goes on in the world. Once these interest rates stop rising, then we'll have a bit of a feel, you know, where things are, and hopefully the housing will pick up and we'll take it from there. But eventually, longer term, the US is most probably more acquisitions, you know, in the sheds. We'll keep building them. You know, every 3 to 5 years, we'll mostly replace a plant, you know, bring them up to date.
American bricks being exported to the UK, I mean, bricks, generally speaking, pretty low value to weight ratio, right? Like trucking them across town's expensive enough. I am flabbergasted that you could make a dollar trying to send a brick from New York to the UK. How's that work?
Well, you know, the freight map of the world is not the geographic map, you know. One way is, like, for example, China to Europe is very strong, but they want to get the containers back in the Pacific Basin. So that's how come we can bring product for $1,000 a container out of, it's basically fuel money, being the containers out of Europe back into the Pacific Basin. So that's what we bring from Italy and Spain, and that works out very well. And we're selling super premium products because there's also people who would like an imported product. Well, the UK is the same. The UK only really makes about 70% of the bricks it consumes. And so it's always had to import. And usually that's been across the channel, mainly in from Belgium and Holland and those sorts of areas. But the freight, believe it or not, is mainly Europe to the US. From the US back, it's backloading. So that's what makes it worse. So selling super premium product, backloading the freight, and you've got yourself a nice business.
Mate, let's finish off with our favourite questions, if you wouldn't mind. A lot of our listeners are big readers, they're watchers, they're streamers, they do all these things. What's on your virtual or literal physical nightstand? What are you reading, watching, and listening to?
At the moment, I'm reading the history of England.
Oh, nice. There you go.
I've always got a couple of books. I mean, I don't read too many business books of that these days, but I'm interested in history, and I like to go, before I go places, go have a read about it to understand it. And even though my family, you know, came 100-odd years ago from there, I don't really sort of totally understand the history, but I thought, so I'll read that. And I'll read a lot of history. I'll read just different times and different eras in history and what happened, or,
I suppose the Romans did discover, was it cement, long before the Poms managed to rediscover it some century too. Or so
great,
later.
Exactly. Great roadmakers, yeah.
Maybe it was always destined for that. Yeah. Obviously, you're watching building and construction trends, mate, but looking around the world, maybe it's that, maybe it's something else. What trends are you watching? What are you seeing? What are you fascinated by?
I think a bit like I thought, modulation is an interesting sort of trend. It hasn't evolved as much as people thought. I mean, putting in whole modules, like in container size, it's more difficult than you think. Panelization is interesting. But, you know, we've been in panelization with precast, and yeah, it was a tough game. We've got out of it. It's got its problems. And the one big high-rise that failed here was panels. And, you know, one thing went wrong, you know, the panel was back to front, or the ledge was wrong or something, and the panel broke. So it's not so easy. But if you put it in like we're talking about, I think that's the way that we can really get the automation up and get the productivity that we need to get on the installation side. I don't know long-term about other products. They seem to think maybe we can do roof tiles. I don't think you're going to be able to do floor tiles. I think floor tiles is for the time being. But, you know, when I look at these things, if you watch the video clips of Boston Robotics and see what those robots, you know, the human-like, and what they can do, they can outperform what a human does. It's only a matter of time that you'll have a robot like a human. You say, here, go load the tiles over there, and they'll work around the clock till they've done it.
Easy for someone to think that AI may not interrupt Brickworks' business, but are you guys keeping an eye on that, or is that something that's sort of...
I've been enjoying using ChatGPT. I give it all these hard questions for it. I said, if I invest this much money for so long and da-da-da, what's the answer? It bingos it out, or... You know, you want to write a card or something, you can't quite get the words right, and the card bingos it out. I thought, this is good. Someone said they're writing their monthly reports. I thought, yeah, I'll have to try that one. Put in all the data, and then I'll write my report.
Right. You get all 4-day work week, your job's done.
It's going to mean more productivity. I mean, I say this to our own staff. All of us have to increase our productivity every year some way. And look at the way I work today to the way I worked 30 or 40 years ago. And it doesn't change. Every year, even though I'm getting on, I know more about what's going on in the world than half my staff. but you know, I'm always looking at, because I'm inquisitive, you know, how do I use that? You know, and there's a classic example. I think that's going to make an explosive growth in our, and they're using it in wars and stuff still, but it's going to make an explosive growth in humans' productivity. Just incredible.
Extraordinary. Mate, you obviously started very young as a ceramic engineer and built a career on it. What advice would you give someone who was either going into or coming out of uni, or maybe a trade, as we started talking about, who was interested in a job in your industry? What advice would you give a young person today?
My first advice to any young person is go do something you love, and you'll never work a day in your life. You don't have to be going doing something you don't like. Doesn't matter what it is, as long as you really, really love doing it, right? That's the first thing. And have a guess what? If you do something you love, you're going to be good at it. Because you're interested. If you do something you don't like, there's a good chance you won't be very good at it at all. So, but whether it be this or any other issue, that's exactly it. You really got to want to do it.
And mate, our last question. I'm an optimist by nature. I find most of our guests are optimists. You kind of need to be in business, right? You have to believe the future is going to be better than the past. So I'm not going to put words in your mouth. I will ask, are you optimistic? And if you are, what are you optimistic about?
Well, I've always been optimistic. I think there's a lot of discussion going on about a whole lot of things which... aren't as big as issues as what maybe being raised, but the real issues are being ignored. And I mean, they're concerns. I mean, I worry about the energy situation. I worry if we're going to have blackouts. So, you know, other than worry about it, I just go buy a generator, you know, and so this blacks out, I've got a generator. So, but I think, you know, bit by bit, contrary to all that, our lives are getting better. Contrary to what people say, our lives are getting better. We're becoming wealthier, becoming more productive. Our jobs are becoming physically less demanding. We're getting to spend more time with our family. You know, particularly if you've got the transport organized, you know, things are getting better. Health is getting better. You know, medicines are getting better. All these things are getting better. You know, I think we live in a very fortunate time, as long as we don't, us human beings, don't muck it up.
I think that's probably the biggest risk. Mate, you've been very, very generous with your time. I am a very happy Brickwork shareholder. May you stay there for many, many years, AI enhanced, hopefully to come. If not, I'm sure your success will do a wonderful job. Lindsay Partridge, thank you for joining us on The Good Oil.
Thank you very much.
This podcast is hosted by me, Scott Phillips, produced by Ed Gooden, and imaged by Link Kelly.